The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Not the dog. Don't touch the dog. Ain't right. I'll give you the motherfucking money. You can walk out of here. Just don't let me see you shooting no dog.
I want the money and I want the gold.
You know I can't do that.
Right. I'm gonna kill your rat.
All right. Take the money and the gold and get out of town. Just put my dog down.
Put your gun down.
Put the gun down.
Step away from it.
Right. I'll put my gun down. Please put my dog down.
Hey, everyone. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today, we're going to be discussing Bill Duke's A Rage in Harlem from 1991. I don't know why I flipped that around. Normally I say the year first. Just pretend like I did that. Our final film and Black Filmmakers Month celebrating African American History Month here in the U.S. But before we do that, let's do this. Does anyone have any heralds or denouncements? Patrick?
Yes, I would like to denounce the movie The Hustler with Paul Newman. I thought it was very middle brow and very kind of, you know, trying to be really deep for the early 60s, I suppose. And it just came off as pretty misogynistic. And I just really think that Poole is boring, honestly. Like, I don't think that there's a way to make it interesting. Even on film, it's a very boring game.
Man, I love playing pool and also watching people play pool.
I don't enjoy playing it, and I also don't enjoy watching people play it.
We might have different reactions to The Hustler.
Chart exclusive.
I love that scene in Color of Money when Tom Cruise plays pool.
That scene is super good.
That's one of the best scenes.
I might have to check that one out.
It's you can sequel. Just watch the scene on YouTube.
Because this isn't a video cast, some people just missed an awesome accidental moment where Patrick said his negative opinion of pool scenes, and then Basil sipped tea, and it was that's none of my business. Accidental moment.
But
Basil,
man, I have some choices. I gotta decide real quick here. I'm gonna go ahead and herald, even though I don't know that it needs any heralding. It's pretty universally acclaimed. But for my American avant-garde film class, we watched Window Water Baby Moving, and that's a pretty awesome movie. Feel like it's super, super good, and they should just show that in health class instead of whatever dumb documentary they show about childbirth.
It's the best childbirth video ever recorded.
Maybe,
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. That might be hyperbolic, but I'm guessing it's at least top five.
Top five childbirth films.
Yeah. Nice.
So, yep. Yeah, it's really, really good. I would say it's maybe my favorite of the Stan Brakhage movies I've seen. And at this point, I've seen probably like 20 of them.
Wow.
Awesome.
It's a lot of Brakhage.
Most of his movies are super short, so it's pretty easy to watch a lot.
True.
Makes sense.
Well, I mean, yeah, if
like
you have
the collection with like all of his movies on, it's only like 4 something hours or something.
Yeah.
If you have more than one to you want to like talk about, that's fine, because I have watched 0 movies this past week. Due to my
Except for Rage in Harlem, I hope.
Yes. It's like, surprise. I've been working. And then
would you like to herald or denounce work?
I would like to herald money and denounce work. So yeah, if you guys have more to talk about, that's cool.
Ruben?
The last one that we did, I heralded Drug War, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You sure did.
Okay. I mean, I've watched a bunch of movies since Drug War. That wasn't a week ago, though. That was like 3 weeks ago.
Well, maybe because it was the best movie you'd seen since last time we did this. And also, to pull back the curtain a little bit, it's been like 2 weeks since we recorded.
It's true.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was going to talk about House of Bamboo, but now I don't know if I saw it between when we recorded the last one and now.
Talk about it.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to herald Samuel Fuller's House of Bamboo, which I haven't gotten a chance to write about yet, but I thought was really, really good. It's kind of a like hard-boiled detective movie that takes place in Japan after the war. Except for like, it's between like, you know, an American military police and then like some American businessmen who are running a gang in Japan. And basically the whole movie is sort of like positing how this hard-boiled detective is like really out of place in Japan and like unhelpful in a lot of ways. And just sort of like pretty slyly commenting on American intervention in Japan and how bad it was in a way that I thought was really good. Like, he's constantly having to like duck down to go into every place because no building in Japan is designed to accommodate him. And I laughed almost every time.
Yeah, I've heard that movie's pretty awesome.
It's cool. I've never heard it again. I've never heard of that movie before.
I first heard of it because back in the LiveJournal days, there was a guy who applied to rating community that we were in, and it was on his list.
Snap.
And I was like, that's a Sam Fuller movie I've never heard of. And at that point, I'd seen like 6 or 7 of his movies. So,
what year is that from?
1955.
Yeah, that's why I watched it, is because one of the things that I'm doing is I randomize all the years of cinema, and then I take the top 3 and I watch 25 films from those 3 years, so that I'm not like, I don't know, so that I do some maybe out of the box watching that maybe I wouldn't have put at the top of my list previously.
Interesting.
So, watching movies from 1955, I just went to the library and I checked out every 1955 movie they had.
Nice.
Speaking of 1955, that translates well into the movie that we're going to be talking about.
Though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Almost a perfect segue.
This is Basil's pick, so give us the plot.
All right, so the plot of A Rage in Harlem basically involves a group of people rob a gold mine, and then they try to sell that gold, and the fence tries to cheat them, and they kill them, and there's a big shootout. And then the woman, Imabel, gets away, and she heard there's another fence in Harlem named Easy Money. So she takes the gold to Harlem, and apparently you can't get gold into Harlem without a lot of people hearing about it. And so many different criminal parties become interested, and also non-criminal parties. And basically the rest of the movie is the gold exchanging different hands, and Forrest Whitaker as a Christian guy falling in love with Emma Bell.
Yeah. I'm sort of split on this movie. I kind of like the beginning of it a lot. Like the first 20 minutes, I was kind of really into it. I felt it had like a nice kind of comic book feel to it, which went well with the noir themes. And I felt it was like set at a tone that was pretty ridiculous and was very enjoyable in that way. And like the scene when Screaming Jay Hawkins sings Put a Spell on You and everyone's dancing the Lindy Hop, I was really into it at that point. And then kind of slowly but surely stopped being into it as like the plot piled on and there were suddenly like emotional stakes that were just seemed ridiculous and didn't work for me. So I liked the first 20-30 minutes of it a lot, and the rest not so much.
I hated this movie. kind of had a bad time with Black Filmmakers Month, but that's okay. I gotta continue to watch Black Filmmakers.
Not giving up that easy.
Yeah. Nope. I can't, like, I don't know, 100% say why that I hated this movie. Part of it is definitely that it's, like, really confrontationally gross at some points. Like, when people stick their tongues in other people's mouths and ears. in a way
I'll
that
second that.
felt like it was trying to make me feel uncomfortable in a way that I didn't particularly think was interesting. But I guess we'll talk about other stuff, because I don't really know what thematically it was trying to say at all. But yeah, it definitely was kind of gross in a way that I didn't like.
Yeah. I also did not like this movie, except for the opening. I really liked the opening where they were actually getting the gold from the white dudes. And they were like, you know, we're going to take all the gold, and then it's like a shootout with black gangsters, and they're shooting all these like Southern police officers. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be a cool movie. And then they get to Harlem and it's just a bunch of nonsense. And I was like, what is even happening with Forrest Whitaker's character? Like, he almost immediately like made me dislike him. I was just like, I don't like him at all. He's a terrible main character. Yeah, I also didn't know what this movie was trying to say. It didn't really seem like it was too concerned with message. It was just a lot of crazy plot twists as it went on, and it just got weirder and weirder, and I was just like, "This, it feels so awkward by the end." That's all I can say about it. It was an awkward movie. Nice.
I like this movie. I mean, I'm more or less in the same boat as Ilya. I thought the first third of it was super, super strong, and I was really into it. I thought a lot of it was really funny and made me laugh, including the part that Ruben said with the tongue in the ear. That made me laugh really hard because it was super gross. I agree, but I thought it was just like making fun of sensual sex scenes and movies with like the slow motion and stuff. Just the idea of him being super good at sex despite never doing it. I don't know. I thought it was just a parody of that kind of scene. So it made me laugh a lot. And, but I agree that once the movie sort of started taking the emotional stakes somewhat seriously, I was like, wait, what kind of movie is this? I thought I was just watching a weird, goofy noir parody, and I was pretty into that. But But then, you know, we're supposed to take it seriously when certain characters die, and that made me sad because I,
yeah, you know, who cares?
Didn't feel like it earned it.
Yes.
And then I felt like the love story sort of got real in a way that I wasn't expecting, and I wasn't into that either. But overall, I still think that I like the movie. I was pretty sure Ruben was not going to like it, though, because it's lit in a real weird way that I don't like. And that bothers Ruben even more than me.
I thought you were going to say because they smashed a dog in a door.
Which I thought was one of the most unrealistic things in the movie. I was like, how did that door crush that dog? Honestly, like, there's no way you could get enough force on that door to crush a dog with it. That door was not that heavy. I didn't understand.
I don't know that this movie was trying to be realistic.
I take umbrage with that door scene.
That was the problem. It kept taking some things like super serious, and then it was like stuff like that would happen, and I was like, does this movie, like, can it decide on a tone? It just really does not know what is happening with its tone. It's crazy. It's all over the yard.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agreed with you that it was a satire. I knew that, like, it was a satire from the, like, first 20 minutes or whatever. But, to me, the thing that bothered me about the grossness was that it just didn't, like, it didn't do anything for me. I was just like, this is just super gross in a way that, like, I don't feel like, I don't know. Like, if that's supposed to be a parody of, like, lovemaking scenes, I don't feel like that actually parodies that, him sticking his, like, tongue in her ear or whatever.
She sticks her tongue in his ear.
Yeah, her sticking her tongue in his ear. I don't feel like that parodies what goes on in those love scenes. I don't know. Also, I thought a lot of the jokes were bad. Like, the repeated one of his mom looking like a man.
Yeah,
I didn't like that one either. That one was bad.
And the whole, like, they would go through the shtick of, like, oh, who's that? It's Jesus. No, the other picture. I was like, this joke, they do it like 3 or 4 times, and I was like,
the jokes,
funny. It wasn't
the
funny
jokes in this
time.
Movie are super terrible. That's definitely true. I at least like the dialogue based jokes that are like, here's a joke, and it's like always terrible. What made me laugh is more like the other stuff that they tried doing with the crazy costuming, and like everyone's character totally turned up to 11 and like eyes bulging and like everyone just being a complete over the top version of like pulp novels and stuff like that. When I felt like the movie was in like dialed into that sort of mood, it was really enjoyable for me, and it kept kind of coming back every now and again, and which is why I, you know, I am still kind of split on it, because like whenever it was like operating under this like crazy fun dumb satire mode, it was really enjoyable. And then whenever Forrest Whitaker started like crying and having like a big argument with his brother or whatever, like I just so didn't care.
I felt like they played that way too seriously, the relationship between the two brothers. I was like, are they really taking this seriously after all the other ridiculous stuff that's happening in this movie? And I don't know, that just a lot of it too was the sound of the movie. I felt like they added in a bunch of ADR lines of them talking to each other that you could tell were like very obviously added in ADR, and I was like, this, it sounds goofy, and it also feels like they're trying to like jam too much information about the characters down your throat. I was like, you know, just let it play out. You don't have to tell us everything. There's all these scenes of them like walking with their backs turned. It's like, I thought you liked our mother or something like that. You didn't even come to the funeral. And it's all this like backstory between them. And I'm like, I don't need to know all of this.
And yeah, it's distracting. I agree. You could have cut all that because it was not a satisfying arc at all. And I thought there was at least going to be some weird story about why he didn't come to the funeral. But then he was just like, the family would have been embarrassed for me to be there. And I was like,
It doesn't really. None of that stuff pays off. And there's also this really annoying thing that the villain does, Slim, where he keeps saying Pop Goes the Weasel, and they try and make that pay off in the end fight scene where he's like reciting the children's rhyme with Pop Goes the Weasel in, and I was like, why is he reciting this? It's just like a goofy quirk for this character to have. Like, it seems like they tried to tack on these goofy little quirks for certain characters to make them distinguished, but they just felt ridiculous and unnecessary.
I agree that I didn't like that part, although I did like the previous part, because I felt like Pop Goes the Weasel was supposed to be code for his, like, friends, so that he could say something that's, like, nonsense, and they would know, okay, it's time to kill these people. And the part when he keeps, like, trying to get them to kill Danny Glover and yelling it over and over again, I thought that part was kind of funny.
Yeah. That's true. I know, that's, I mean, the, this kind of why I, in the beginning, I called, like, this more like a comic book movie, because, like, all the characters make sense as drawings or, like, exaggerated caricatures, you know? Well, like, yeah, it's more like a collection of these characters just doing crazy stuff and like, their own separate frames. It doesn't really come together very well, but I feel like on their own, these frames are pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it that way. The movie, I don't know, for some reason I didn't look at it that way. I felt the stereotypicalness of a lot of the characters bothered me. It was something that was, like, tacked on for comic relief, I felt, a lot of the times. Because it was like the guys who worked with him at the mortuary would, you know, one of them was, like, trying to comfort this grieving widow and was, like, obviously hitting on her. And I was like, this is gross and uncomfortable. Like, I'm not laughing at it.
Yeah, I could have done without those characters also. Some of the side characters I was super bored by. But
like the Islamic guy?
I actually liked him.
I didn't understand what he was doing there at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. He never pays off in any way. And the part that he plays in the dream sequence was just weird. That the dream sequence itself was very strange.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
I don't even remember.
I don't even remember that.
She has a weird dream that Slim shows up and kills Forrest Whitaker. And then...
Oh, yeah.
Turns out to be fake.
Yeah.
But
it's actually Robin Givens' dream. Emma Bell's.
That's what he said.
Oh, right. I thought you said he. Right. She. Mm.
Got my pronouns right.
Yeah, I was just clarifying for Ilya because he didn't seem to remember it at all.
I'm sure that's what you were doing.
I was. Guys.
Another thing about the which kind of made me like I feel like Forrest Whitaker's character was kind of like he reminded me very much of Jerry Lewis and the Nutty Professor. Like he was just like this totally exaggerated version of a nerd virgin, whatever. And like religious to boot and like all of this stuff just piled on. And I was kind of expecting like, okay, so then at some point in this movie, he's just going to like man up or whatever and like get the girl. And I guess that is kind of what happens in the end, but I felt like the movie could have played it even more to like this point, just completely get rid of all his weird backstory and everything having to do with his mother and just play it in this weird way where like at some point Robin Givens or Emma Bell just gets really into him or whatever. Like that would have made it more fun for me. And if it had like, if these parallels to the Nutty Professor were like actually like consciously made by the movie, I would have enjoyed that more also because at times, like, it reminded me of that movie also and how, like, bright and colorful everything is and how, like, everything's popping and from the soundtrack to the visuals. And I kind of wish that there was, like, more of that.
I don't know. Oh, go ahead, Basil.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like, in a way, it twisted that angle where you think that he's going to be the one that kind of saves the day, but then Robin Givens is really kind of the only strong enough character at the end. I thought that the treatment of her was actually pretty good in that she's sort of like a femme fatale, but they treat her with a lot more sympathy and give her kind of multifacets. And I feel like that she ends up shooting him is pretty cool. And in the car when she has that argument with Grady Hines' character, Goldie, and she says, "Don't fuck with me," I was like, that's a good line delivery. I really believe her.
Yeah, I liked her a lot in this movie, actually. Yeah,
I would have liked this movie if I liked her a lot, but I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, I didn't.
That she was being like sexualized and used a lot.
I didn't enjoy her character, and I think it was mostly because I found it completely unrealistic that she would actually be into a character like Forrest Whitaker's character, Jackson.
Well, I thought that was kind of the point.
Yep. I don't know. He's just such a fucking nerd. Like, I hated him. I guess I identified too much with that like Christian nerd angle, and I was just like, oh god, this shit. Fuck those guys.
Oh, no.
Right? Am I right?
Poor Patrick. I think that was
interesting. Well, I did think it was interesting that Bill Duke got the no fuck you thing in the movie. Like, I was like, hey, this is a callback to his role in Commando, where he says that to Arnold Schwarzenegger. I was like, that's pretty funny.
One satirical scene having to do with Jackson that I did like is early in the movie. It might be the first scene we see him in, when he's praying for money and to not have any obstacles such as women come in his way.
Yeah, like, that was funny.
I thought that was pretty funny. It made me think of those churches where that like literally happens, where they're like, if you know, it's like, if you believe in Jesus, money will come your way, and then like everyone like throws their money at the preacher. It's gonna be delivered back tenfold, and how fucking insane those churches are. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Black.
I thought some of his line deliveries were super funny, like when he says about being an undertaker, it's a very exciting line of work. And this is super sincerely.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
But
I don't know. I feel like Forrest Whitaker was just like doing all the Forrest Whitaker actor thingies in his arsenal in this movie.
That's true.
Like, there's like, I think like some of these things I really like, and a lot of them I also don't. And he was just doing all of them. Like, every single thing that he can do, he was doing it all. And I think, like, that's not necessarily his fault, because that's also how his character was drawn. But I don't know if I can... Like, I liked goofy Forrest Whitaker a lot. I didn't like, emotional Oscar scene Forrest Whitaker that much.
Oh, yeah. You know? I have written down Oscar moment frowny face.
Oh no, nothing worse than an Oscar moment.
I like the one in Ganja and Hiss, though, when Ganja delivers the speech about her childhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's the kind of movie that would not ever get consideration for an Oscar, so I feel like,
well, I don't think this one would either.
I feel like that excuses that movie.
This one either, though.
Yeah. Not this one either.
There's no world where this is getting nominated for anything.
Yeah, although apparently it had a pretty great reception at Cannes, this movie.
Nice.
Which,
it also made like $10 million at the box office, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
In 1991 dollars.
Those were good dollars back then.
So it was a bit of a hit.
I remember when I would get a dollar in 1991, how happy I was.
Just doesn't compare to now.
When I was 6 years old.
I also wrote down, did y'all like the Lindy Hop scene? You didn't?
No.
I mean, I love the,
I liked it.
It reminded me of the Malcolm X scene, obviously.
Except for that it was bad.
Except for, I thought it was like,
but it was also
different. I don't know if it was bad. It was different.
I thought it was anti-sex. I think that's when I started disliking the movie, is that scene, actually. I was like, ooh, dancing. Like, this is going to get me really going. And then it was like, everyone was like kissing each other and humping each other in a way that was like really over the top. And I was like, is this movie hate sex? And then there was that sex scene, and I was like, yeah, I kind of think that it does. And I was like, I'm outie.
Although, I will say, I enjoyed Screamin' Jay Hawkins' performance. He was just doing his screaming Jay Hawkins thing.
Well, it was like playback of his song. He wasn't even singing it live. I think it was like some other actor, obviously, maybe even playing him. I'm not sure actually about that. Maybe it wasn't. But it was definitely a playback of that song.
Well, he did a very good impression of him if it was an actor.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just totally off here.
But I like the part when
it says Screamin' Jay Hawkins himself in the IMDb. Cool. So
that's pretty cool.
I like the part when he like throws down the big explosive thing and then like dodges out of the way of it. That made me laugh really hard.
That was pretty funny.
That was the part that I included in the montage.
Nice.
I did actually. I wrote down in my notes like he has about a million props in that scene. Like he has so many props for this song.
Yeah. To speak to Ruben's point about the movie hating sex thing, I'm not sure like it would have that much Robin Givens in it if it hated sex, because Robin Givens is just like completely dripping with sex this whole movie. Like she's all
the movie does.
I don't even know about that.
I thought the movie liked her.
I thought so too. I mean, I didn't think it hated her. I felt like it gave her a lot of pretty cool scenes.
I thought it liked her a little too much. I think that was my problem. It was like a little too into her. It's like, okay, movie, back off. It's a little creepy.
Yeah, I mean, she's extremely beautiful. I wasn't going to bring that up because it's not really a point about the movie. But the first time she appeared on camera, I was like, oh, my God.
Tone it down a little bit, guys. Come on.
Taken aback with how unbelievably gorgeous.
She's very attractive, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I didn't get the sense that the movie liked it. Patrick and Ilyuin. Scarlett Johansson was the best actress of 2014. No, she was the worst.
Yeah, that happens occasionally.
The movie didn't like her at all. No, the movie liked her too much.
Oh, boy.
I thought it was like... I thought it was like parodying it, but it was still like kind of like an old biblical story type stuff going on with like a Jezebel and whatnot. I didn't think within this caricature there was a place for her to like gain agency, I guess. I thought it was just like, I don't know.
But his life is way better after she... I don't know, isn't the...
He acts
Jezebel?
Human, I guess. He stops acting like a weird robot. But I don't... I mean, it doesn't make any sense that he's in love with her, except for that she's gorgeous. So that's not particularly good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be a healthy romance. He's just, like, completely infatuated with her to that point.
And yeah, just but like, that's not atypical for... like all movies ever.
Right.
Yeah. Just about.
I just don't. I don't know. I guess I'm tired of the like, oh, his life is better now that there's a woman in it.
Like, sure.
That's a really cliched thing to throw at me.
You know? Well, I'm not sure if the movie really says that because he also almost gets killed mostly because of that.
Yeah, but he has
that.
A bunch of gold at the end.
Bunch of money.
That's what it's all about. Getting that gold.
Yeah, but she still has her third of the money. Yeah.
True.
One of my notes, it doesn't really fit, but I wrote down this movie is the good, the bad, and the ugly in Harlem. Everyone is just like, give me the gold.
Yeah, that's part of what makes this movie kind of seem a little ridiculous, that everyone is after gold. Like it's like we're pirates on the Caribbean or on the open ocean or whatever.
Treasure Island.
I don't know. I feel like, yeah, I also wrote down, I wrote down butt licking as one of the things.
Oh, right.
There was a lot of
that was also in the sex scene there. Yeah.
That was the what, like, so that was the part of the sex scene, which I don't know when it happened. It took me so off guard. Like, I was definitely not expecting that to happen at all.
Even though the scene, the shot right before that is the ear, I was like, whoa. Where's it going to go from here?
And yeah. I was like, oh, it's going there.
And then I thought it was funny later, when they're at the whorehouse, there's a woman dancing on stage with just like a giant mouth puppet, like dancing next to her with the tongue, like that licking her. And I was like,
the second like instance of butt licking,
like public reenactment of that strange sex scene we saw before.
I thought that part was super funny. I like that when she took parts of her clothes off, she like fed it into the weird head's mouth.
That was a very strange stage show.
I felt like that scene was really racist, and I don't know why. I was just like, I don't want to watch this scene anymore.
I was going to say, to go back real quick to what Ruben was saying, I felt like both Forrest Whitaker and her had an arc in an interesting way that I wouldn't normally associate with noir or whatever, that in the beginning she is super sexualized, but she's also like using her sexuality in a pretty mercenary way where she's just like, well, this is what I have to do because this is what people respond to. And then over the course of the movie, she, you know, figures out it's better than just money. You can have a guy who'll do everything for you, I guess. I mean, it's not like super.
Yeah. So she.
It's not super whatever, but because it's all just playing into archetypes, but I still feel like the fact that I think it gives them both equal agency in the story. Right. And
so she becomes a hooker with a heart of gold and a pocket full of gold as well.
It's true.
Ruben keeps pointing his thumb down and making
poo
noises.
Making fart noises.
Making fart noises like a weirdo over here.
Good podcasting.
It's great. It's great for the
people are listening to this. They're going to be like, what? Just kidding.
I think they'll get the
Nobody
message.
Listens to this.
Nobody but us.
We'll listen to it later and laugh about it.
Yes, like I do when I listen to this podcast in public transportation.
It would be very funny if you just like were laughing at it. They're like, "What are you laughing at?" And you're like, "Oh, just myself, a joke I made."
Yeah, I told you guys the story about like how this actually happened to me.
It's
when
my
I bumped
favorite story.
When I bumped into a person like that I knew from a while ago, and I took down my earphones, and that person realized that was my voice coming from the earphones, and I realized that too. And he's just like, is that all you do? Just ride around town listening to yourself.
That's amazing.
It was just so, that was like, that's when I knew.
He was like, getting a little conceited, aren't we?
I was doing something right. Very, very right.
To get back to the movie, I guess what I'm saying is like, so one of my notes here is about Slim and how he was gross in a way that made me uncomfortable. The idea that like, I got that this was a satire, but that it went to a place where it was like, where it just became like a gross thing. Like, I didn't feel like it was making fun of anything anymore, and it was just kind of steering into how it would not be satirical in a way that I was just like, I thought it was satirical at first, and then I was like, no, now it's just that thing that it's making fun of. It's just become that by being too gross. I don't know.
Can you elaborate on that? Like, I don't know. No. I don't know what you mean about Slim.
He I don't know. He looks like a racist stereotype, I feel like.
Well,
in a way that made me super uncomfortable.
I think what you were trying to say is, you can say that I'm wrong about this. This is what I'm kind of getting. Is that he's like kind of over the top bad guy at the beginning. Like he's like your, you know, he's like a...
No, like the way that he looks and like the way that he acts with his looks is what I'm talking about.
Okay, so you're saying it's more of a racialized thing than it is just like a bad guy stereotype.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at pictures of him now, and it's just like, I don't know, the faces that he makes gross me out.
I was thinking like, it's kind of making him out to be like, you know, just like a mustache twirling villain, if you will, throughout the whole thing. But towards the end, I don't know, he just comes off as really cartoony to me, and I guess that's the point. But I don't know. When I watched it, I wasn't really like particularly on board with the satire angle. Particularly because I enjoy noir generally, and so I was like, "All right, this is going to be a noir." And then it was like crazy, and I was like, "Oh, what is this? This is kind of awkward and weird." But then the tone like fluctuated so wildly, and also that. I had a real problem with that confrontation scene between Slim and Easy Money where they end up just like having a shootout and he holds Danny Glover's dog hostage. And I was like, this is just odd. Like, it's just, I can't decide where this movie like actually wants to land on this. Is it, I mean, I guess it's saying that this is, it's kind of a ridiculous thing, but I didn't know exactly what, from what angle it was supposed to be parodying something. Like, is it a parody of an action movie? Is it a parody of noir? Like, what is it making fun of anymore? Or is this just here to sort of like get a laugh out of us? Like, ha ha ha, Danny Glover cares about that dog so much, and he's like a crime boss, but he cares about this little poofy dog so much. Isn't that funny? And I was like, it's not really that funny.
Well, it's like The Godfather. Except instead of a cat, he has a dog, and he actually cares about it. But I don't know.
Also,
Danny Glover's character is just really weird in this movie. I wasn't really sure how to take him.
I don't buy him as a crime boss, honestly. I don't know.
I mean, I was going to say just the idea that there is something weird and innate in us that we care way more about dogs than we do about people dying in a movie, and that's
a good point.
He's sort of the embodiment of that. Where
I didn't though.
He doesn't care that.
No, but that,
well,
that
but the point does. Stands.
I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, and I was
he's
saying
not
that
talking
he
about
does,
that
like,
you specifically needed to care about that dog, but that in a movie we often will not respond at all to, like, you know, dozens of people dying. And then they'll kill a dog, and we'll be like, "No, puppy."
Maybe that was where the dissonance lied for me in that scene, because I was just like, "All these people just got shot, and he's worried about this dog." I was like, "Why do you care so much about that dog?" I don't know. That whole thing just felt weird to me.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I laughed. But I guess I'm gonna.
I thought. Like,
be the person defending this.
No, that's cool. I think like Danny Glover definitely seemed like he was really into this movie like this whole time that he was on screen. I think he really kind of hammed it up at times, like the way he was talking in his like low baritone voice with people. And like, I haven't seen a woman in 2 weeks. I might have seen you in a dream. And whatever. Like, he's at least kind of like, in a way, like, the way Imabel's character and him keep flirting with each other, I thought was pretty funny. Like, nothing ever happens with that, but, like, the way that they're flirting with each other was kind of fun.
I think that was another aspect that bothered me, too. Like, that flirting, I was like, gross. No.
Flirting, gross.
just those two characters, like, the way that they...
Okay, are, fair enough.
Was she even flirting with him, or was he just, I can't even remember now.
She was doing what she does in a lot of the scenes, which is just like using her sexuality to kind of make stuff go smoother, that she wants this business deal to happen, and so she's willing to flirt with him a little bit to make it go smoothly. But
yeah, I didn't like the movie, but I really agree with your point about the dog. I thought that was a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
I support you on it.
Cool.
meh.
I was just about to say something else, but now I can't.
Also dog related? Oh,
right, just to kind of somewhat address what Ruben was saying. I think what you didn't like about Slim, maybe I kind of did, which was that I thought that the fact that this movie even exists is kind of amazing, and that it has kind of a in-community feel to it. Like, it feels like it's built around this idea of kind of, here's this big, almost blockbustery action crime movie sort of geared right at black audiences, and that I thought that that was kind of cool that in 1991 that was the kind of movie that could get like a legitimate budget and some pretty big stars behind it, and that I felt like maybe in the same way that like early Chris Rock stuff, he stopped doing some of his jokes when he realized that his audience had expanded so much that it was now primarily white, and that like a lot of white people were laughing at jokes that he kind of originally wrote to do in black clubs, where he's like making fun of, you know, things that he didn't like about or see in the black community, and that when those people are all laughing at that, that's kind of an okay thing because, you know, they're all sort of laughing at themselves. But then as soon as he's playing in a theater and it's almost all white people, then it's not cool for them to be laughing because then it's just like encouraging racist attitudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing with the Chappelle Show too. He said the same thing.
That makes sense.
And this is your
parodies of racism, and that at a certain point he realized that there were a lot of just racist people who were just enjoying it for racism's sake.
So you're saying that this is like the pre-stadium filling Chris Rock thing? Like this
a little bit. Like that I thought that there were a lot of jokes that were sort of geared at making black audiences laugh and like sort of see different... that there's like can be a whole bunch of different characters in the movie, and that some of them embody what we consider stereotypical tropes or stereotypical attitudes, but that because it's such a just wide range of different kinds of characters, it doesn't necessarily, I don't know.
I agree. I think that's actually
racist connotations.
I think that's a point that we haven't actually talked about when we were talking about all these movies by black filmmakers, in how far actually it matters that maybe they were intended for black audiences. And that, for example, we, just to say that, or me, sure. I don't know, I'm probably not really the intended audience in the first place. And so that a lot of things can actually go over my head, or that I just am not dialed in a way that maybe another audience would be, and that actually like, also matters.
I always try to say that I like or dislike a movie as opposed to it's good or bad.
Yeah.
Right.
It's there.
Right. For sure. Although I feel like there's
different audiences.
It's hard to kind of account for someone else's potential reaction to this, which might be different than mine. But it's something that still should be considered, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Basil's point makes sense. I think it's a really good point, but that means that in order for me to enjoy the movie, I have to account for how another audience would see it as opposed to how I see it, which is something that's kind of difficult.
It's difficult, right? Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
It's a fair argument.
To me, it's like, it's hard for me to imagine watching this with like another white person and them not being like, this movie seems kind of racist.
Yeah.
So.
You can only have the experience that you have in the movie. Like,
but that's like,
have somebody else's experience with it.
We've gotten into that argument, I guess, about like action movies recently too, and how much I enjoy action movies that I feel like are commenting on other action movies. And then other people watch it and they'll be like, no, it's just like another action movie. Any other action movie? I was like, no, it's a commentary. Guys, come on.
It's making fun of that action movie. Come on, guys.
So.
Yeah, I thought it was, this is somewhat off topic, but earlier today I was listening to a different podcast talking about Casino Royale. And they never once talked about the sort of self-reflexivity inherent to that movie and the way that it questions and wants to analyze what, like, why do people like James Bond? I feel like that's the central question that they started that movie with. And
yeah,
I was very surprised that you could talk for an hour about that movie without bringing that up.
Did they even talk about manhood and what it means to be a man at all?
Nope.
Is this scene where someone literally attacks his balls?
Nice. Do they just talk about how cool parkour is and stuff like that?
Yeah. I feel
you
like,
nailed it.
I feel like a lot of podcasts are really facile in that regard.
I like how we're shitting on other podcasts.
Yeah, take that as a podcast.
I always love when we do that. I feel like that's definitely.
And by virtue, other listeners, because people actually listen to their podcasts and nobody listens to ours.
Yes, right. It is also true. Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable with that. It doesn't really bother me that much.
Yeah. I think we've made some strides.
At the ivory tower.
Yes.
towards being a more listable podcast that might actually be listened to by somebody at some point.
Meh.
To not shit on other podcasts?
No. I just mean like our podcast could actually be listened to by people at some point. I feel like some of our earlier ones, people would just throw them out the window. Even if we had some more things to say. But we've gotten better.
Yeah.
Especially when we all like the movie. When we all like the movie, those podcasts are usually really good.
That's right on.
True.
Those are my favorites, yeah.
Although we do have some interesting disagreements from some. This is totally incidental, but one thing I wanted to point out about the movie is that it has really funny, like, street dialogue. Like, there's a scene really early on where there's a blind guy, but he's not really blind. He's just a con man, and he's checking out the women. And I feel like a lot of movies, that would be the end of the joke, but then there's a line that one of the women says really quickly, which is like, I wrote it down. Oh, she just calls him, like, what are you doing, you dirty old man, or something like that. And I thought that was a funny way to end it. And then later when they're having the chase, and they drive up onto the sidewalk, one of the pedestrians yells, hey, what's wrong with the street? And I thought that was a funny line too.
I think that was another 80-yard moment. There's just like, they just threw in some 80-yard jokes.
Yeah, but I thought they were good. Whoever did punch up on those street scenes.
Nice job.
I don't know.
Patrick is anti ADR and everything.
Yeah, apparently.
I'm not anti ADR. It's
because
he's
the mic operator. It's ADR people taking away his jobs.
Costume may work.
There's some issues there.
No, it's just when they use it as like a band-aid for stuff like that. It's better used to make things seamless, you know, and in the case of this movie, it does not feel seamless at all. It sounds like they ADR'd it in a completely different environment than they filmed it in. And so you can tell, it sounds like they're in like a studio doing voiceover for some of the ADR. And you're just like,
That was a nice voice effect that you just did. Yeah,
a good effect for the podcast.
I really like that one. Patrick's got all kinds of tricks.
Maybe we should all talk like that. I bet our voices would sound better.
Okay. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you.
Tonight on the Loose Cannons podcast.
The smooth sounds of Loose Cannons. 98.7.
Gonna be going easy on the podcast tonight.
Coming up next, nice. We have Heralds and Denouncements. Basil dropping a denouncement on us today. I was gonna say something before we devolved into all that. So here's the joke.
But what a devolution. I said, but what a devolution. Yes.
So here's something that I thought of way earlier when Ilya said that it was comic booky, and I was gonna ask Patrick if that means that he would be okay with Brother Mazone being in this film.
Yeah, I thought that the Muslim character did remind me a lot of him. Actually, I was like, yeah, Brother Mazone would fit right in this movie.
Being the most comic booky character of The Wire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that on, I think that was an Ilulus podcast, actually.
Mm-hmm. One of the early ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Where he felt like a character out of a Frank Miller comic book.
Yeah, but I feel like saying that actually kind of makes it sound like every other character in The Wire is like so realistic. And I mean, Omar is in it, and Omar is like the least realistic character ever.
Not realistic, but nuanced, I would say. They're
true.
More subtle.
Yeah,
with their
Brother Mazone definitely has nuanced. Very little nuance. I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I think we also, what I wanted to mention with this movie, which I don't know, maybe that doesn't really, but it was directed by Bill Duke, and he made another movie that I liked a lot, called Deep Cover, which was
That's
really awesome.
Too.
And I really like Bill Duke as an actor. He was like, I think he was one of those macho action movies like Predator and stuff like that. But like rewatching them now, I feel like he's just like a really cool actor also. So he's definitely like a guy who I'm really into whatever stuff he does. This movie was probably so far not my absolute favorite thing that he's done, but I think in general, Bill Duke is like a really underrated artist and a pretty cool actor / director.
I agree. Yeah. Deep Cover is super good. Much better than this. I feel somewhat confident that everyone would at least feel mildly positive to not that negative if they watched it. I don't know. It's pretty hard to dislike. And it takes the story a little bit more seriously and has more to say about capitalism and stuff like that.
I think Deep Cover also has like some sort of a
weird, farcy,
it's wacky,
jokey thing. Yep.
What about when the blood is spilled on the gold? You didn't feel like that was saying something about capitalism?
Red and gold. I think Deep Cover also has like some issues with this messiness at the end or whatever. Slight. Like, plot gets a little jumbled and stuff. But yeah, I think it's definitely like a pretty great movie.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. For good reason. Yes.
I don't think
I don't think that character was thought through in any interesting way.
Because we wanted to avoid that?
Yeah, I think it just pops up and like it's just
Okay, I agree.
Big Kathy was her name. Yeah. But I appreciate that Big Kathy wasn't just there for a laugh. Like she wasn't just there for a joke. It was like this character.
Yeah, they didn't laugh at her at all, really.
Yeah, she was competent and
I probably
very included.
Would have liked a movie about her better.
Honestly,
yeah. I was gonna say it seemed like the portrait was actually a little bit sensitive to me because there's a part where the cops come in and are really rude and pretty homophobic about it. And I felt like the movie was not on their side in that moment, like that the cops were just being douchebags and that it was sort of like, I don't know, just the kind of, where I was going with that, except that I felt like it was on their side. And I mean, it was on, not on their side. And so,
yeah.
I read somewhere that the books are actually, it's like a series of books and it's about the cops. And that this movie, you know, is pretty heavily rewritten to be around, you know, Forest Whitaker as Jackson and Emma Bell. I can't imagine reading the book if it's about the cops like they are in this movie, because they're just really unpleasant to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet they're much different characters in the books, but this is sort of a side thing, but I did think it was pretty funny how everyone is constantly impersonating being police in the movie. Like, you just say that you're the police and then everyone believes you.
It's an early version of Let's Be Cops.
Yeah.
I guess you could do that back in the 50s when everybody wore suits. You're just like, oh, they're wearing a suit. They must be cops. Everybody wears suits.
You got a suit and a gun and you say you're cops, then you're cops, I guess.
Yeah. I honestly thought the more interesting story would have been the relationship between Gregory Hines' character and Big Kathy. That would have been a more interesting thing. Like, you know, Greg Hines is the one who wants to go out and find the gold, and Big Kathy's like, no, it's too dangerous, don't go. And they could have butted
heads. I also thought it would have just been more fun if it just kept piling on the ridiculousness. I feel like I thought that the gold was just going to keep changing a lot of
obviously
different people's
hands. Like
maybe Easy Money would have it, and then they would have it, and then it would kind of turn into this weird caper of who has the gold and who can get it. And
what if the dog got the gold at the end?
Yeah.
It would have been maybe funnier if nobody got the gold at the end.
It's true. Just like Treasure of Sierra Madre. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, Treasure of Sierra Madre.
It's true.
Oops, the gold dust blows away, guys. Sorry. We're spoiling a 70-year-old movie
that I haven't seen.
Well, you had 70 years to see it.
All right, I'm just going to start spoiling every 70-year-old movie for you.
Okay. Because I honestly don't care about having movies spoiled for me.
I have to be at work in 7 hours.
Nice.
I am going to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, please go to iTunes and subscribe, give us 5 stars and write a nice review, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
I'm shooting you with goodbyes. I'm gonna go get some.